And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We do stream this program live at those times at the RichardDugan.com radio shows page is where we put the podcast. We have a link to the listen live, to listen live to the programs on all, believe it or not, it's on all of the pages at RichardDugan.com. So don't tell me you can't find it. I know you can. Just keep looking in the upper right-hand quadrant, if you will. Look for my, look for the picture of the guy with the hat, okay? Look for that guy. And then click on it, and away you go. We hope that you will also go to SoundCloud and iTunes so that you can also listen to these interviews. A reminder that just because you listen to the radio version, which is 50 minutes long, that's 50 minutes long, doesn't mean that that's how long the interview was. It could have gone on for days, and you're missing so much good information. However, that is subject to our guests' availability. We also link to our guest's website. We'll be giving you that as well as we move forward here on the program. And we certainly hope you will avail yourself of our guest's information. It's vitally important that you do so because that's how we evolve. Now, I realize that that is not the way they phrase it when they tell you to go to school and get an education. They talk to you about expanding your horizons. Well, how is that different from evolving? And we are an evolving species. We are an adaptive species. And we also are a people that are trying to make this a better place for everyone. So we encourage you to go to our guest website. We'll give that website to you here in just a moment. I think you're going to enjoy today's program. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Today, instead of thinking of me as Richard Dugan, think of me as Monty Hall. Who's Monty Hall? He was the host of the wonderful program that you might have heard of called Let's Make a Deal. And every so often during that program, he would give a contestant the opportunity to choose from either door number one, door number two, or what's behind door number three. And sometimes it was, as you used to hear the announcer say, a brand new car. Well, in this case, how about a brand new life? Yours. Changing. Transforming. I think that you're going to enjoy the program. And we're going to be talking with the author of not what's behind door number three, but actually the three rooms, of which I'm assuming there are doors on these rooms. Kevin Murphy, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Richard. I'm delighted to be here.
I don't know if you're that familiar with that particular game show going back to the 60s and 70s or not. I kind of age myself there, but so be it. But I find it interesting, too, that this particular book, The Three Rooms, Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life, it's not a new concept, but the way you put it together, I think, is very interesting for our listeners to investigate. First of all, tell us a little bit about Kevin Murphy and why this particular, and not specifically the book, but why this work, talking about moving into the present room and enjoying our lives, is so important to you to be sharing, to be writing a book, to being on this program, and I'm sure being interviewed by other folks as well. What is it about this that is so important to you that you've just got to get out there?
Well, I think, first of all, Richard, I love the analogy to Monty Hall, and I think there's, you know, it creates a powerful image, and that's kind of the same concept with the three rooms, and, you know, exactly what you alluded to. This is, you know, it's not all new information, but it's a new way to look at it and a new way to apply it. You know, because you can look all around and today and find information about, you know, how to live a consciousness-minded lifestyle. You know, we hear things like, you know, mindfulness and living in the present and being in the now. And it all centers around the conscious awareness of our thoughts. So there's a lot of people who really understand how important it is to monitor our thoughts. But the problem is most of us just don't do a very good job at it. So you have to ask the question, like, why not? Now, after all, if our thoughts can directly affect our health and our wealth and our relationships, you know, either people don't think they have enough time to monitor their thoughts, or they don't want to take the time, or maybe they just don't know how. And I think the purpose of the three rooms is kind of to address the how.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm having a feeling it's number three. What's behind door number three? That is the reason, because there are so many things that we're not taught in school, in church, or whatever religious institution you attend from your parents, because they don't know how.
This is very true, and I think that you know, instead of thinking about what everybody else is telling us and how we should be and what we should feel, it's kind of looking within.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at an interesting time in our history where many people are looking within to find peace and that feeling of harmony or unity with others. But when you look around, you still see so many people in stress or struggling with job pressures, addiction and real feelings of isolation. So not only are people taking sides on a lot of different issues, but they're no longer listening to the other side's point of view. And in many areas, there's a lot more disharmony than harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And that shouldn't be the case. We really need to start to seeing the similarities we share with people, not being driven apart by our differences. And we find those similarities when I talk about being in the present room.
Mm. Well, I have to say that, and I'm not going to cast aspersions here on any person, but when in my industry, the broadcast industry, back in the 80s, when the Fairness Doctrine was abolished by that present administration, I thought, this is not good. Now, I've heard arguments to the contrary that, oh, no, because we don't want the government telling us what we have, can and cannot do on radio and television and the newspapers and so forth and so on. And I'm thinking, well, this has been my argument over the issue of regulations, that regulations started because businesses in particular refused to do the right thing. Why do you think we have child labor laws? Because we didn't want children under the age of 18 working in sweatshops. We did not think that was appropriate. But apparently business did, because that was cheap labor. When the Fairness Doctrine was abolished, I don't know if you remember that or not, it said that anybody on any network, on any station, radio or television, did not have to discuss an issue comprehensively and from, let's just say, both sides. And I thought, how is that serving people? Because, my gosh, I would like to hear the pros and the cons on a particular subject. And so now here we are in the 21st century, and look where we are in the 21st century, just as you've explained. So when you talk about these three rooms, and we're going to get into now I'm going to just make the guess, okay? Just going to make the guess. The three rooms are like, I don't know, maybe past, present, future, something like that.
I think you're right on the money on that.
Now, here's a key that I find interesting, and I think that this is something we need to dive into, because we are always asking all kinds of questions all the time and about ourselves. I mean, there are people who will go to intuitives and psychics and mediums and so forth, and could you tell me about my relationship? Could you tell me about this? Could you tell me about that? I want to know if I'm going to have, 7 digits in my bank account, or if I'm going to have this incredible relationship, or if I'm going to live in this wonderful place. But one of the things that you talk about is about asking the right question, the power of the question, and not only where am I, but also where do I want to be? You hear that question often. Someone will come to you and say, so, Kevin, you're doing this work now. Where do you see yourself in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, et cetera? And usually that's like in a job interview. But isn't that really where we're kind of missing it, because we're not asking the right question?
Yeah, I totally agree. And when we ask, it is about our definition of ourselves. When we say I am this or I am that, the I am is our awareness of being. And when people ask, the question, who am I, which is an iconic question, they're really not talking about the I that everybody else can see, because, they know who that person is. You know what your occupation is, or you're a male or a female, and you're white, you're Asian, or whatever your features are. We know who we are on the outside, but we're really asking, who am I on the inside? Who is that person? Like, why did I say that? And you're trying to identify with that person. And too often, like you said, we ask questions like, where will I be in the future? Or, and we're trying to figure out, that person that everybody else sees, but we really want to know who that person is on the inside. And when I like to ask the question, where am I? It's so powerful because, who we are on the outside always changes, but who we are on the inside, never changes. That's our, our eternal being, if you will, our higher self. But what does change is our thoughts. And where we go with our thoughts, either into the past that can create some negative emotions, if we're thinking about things that we perceive people have done to us, or into the future when we're kind of, let's say thinking about worst case scenario about what can happen, and that creates negative emotions, or we can be in the present and being aligned with that part of us inside, that I that only we can see. And it's that alignment with that I and getting to know that I where we really start to feel a oneness, not just with ourselves and feel, a connection to that source within us, but then we can start to feel a oneness with everybody else. So, the key to the three rooms is all about, being aware of our thoughts. And in order to be aware of them, we just need to observe them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is that act of observation that separates our awareness from our thoughts. And that awareness is the divine consciousness that all the mystics have always talked about. And that is that part of us that is aware of our thoughts is consciousness. And it is that universal intelligence that we all have access to.
Well, that's something we want to talk about, too, because one of the other things that we talk about on this program fairly regularly has to do with, a lot of different things. But one in particular is our intuition. That gut feeling and so forth. Now, you come from a place where, from what I've been reading here, you were doing pretty doggone good over in New York and on Wall Street and so forth. And obviously, there was something that told you, this just isn't enough. This, I want to pick another room, so to speak. Tell us about that.
Well, I spent 33 years with one firm on Wall Street, but it was really six different firms that merged together. And I think through each of those mergers, you learn a lot about yourself, as well as other people's behaviors, especially during times of adversity. And we all have to deal with our own levels of adversity, both, at work and at home. And I certainly was no different. And so ultimately I started to look within for answers because I wasn't getting the right answers from other people. So 5 years ago, this, doing this show right now would have seemed like a very unlikely event for me. But then I started to get this premonition that I was going to write a book. And it included an image of three doors, which ironically, that's why when you're starting with Monty Hall, I kept chuckling because that's the image that started, this whole book. And one of the doors was labeled the past and one was labeled the present, one the future. And then those three doors eventually became the three rooms as I kept describing the places our thoughts go behind the doors. And what was most interesting to me was that early on, I wrote down 10 chapters to the book, and those chapters never changed. And over the next 3 years, while I was commuting back and forth into the city, and I kept writing down thoughts or ideas, and I would fill them into different parts of the book. Sometimes they came from movies or songs. Other times they came from just life experiences. You know, I think of something and I write it down and say, you know, that goes into the chapter on the pastrum and holding on to anger. And, you know, this talks about moving from room to room. Our thoughts, you know, move back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I would literally write on the railroad and the subways or, you know, in the gym on the treadmill in the morning. And eventually all the chapters were filled in. And that's when I realized, you know, I needed to publish the book.
I've got something here. I need to get this out. I need to get this out. I know the feeling. I've been working on mine for 17 years. and I'm not rewriting War and Peace either. It's a small little thing. But for whatever reason, I guess maybe the universe is just telling me the timing isn't quite right. We're getting there. We're getting there. But the timing isn't quite right. You talk about the three rooms, but you also talk about how there's also just one.
Well, ultimately, you know, that's the place where we really want to go. I mean, there is a oneness in the, you know, let's call it in the entire universe, you know, one verse, if you want to think of it as a song. And that's, you know, that's where we're aligned with this divine consciousness that creates and represents, you know, the entire, you know, world as we know it. And, you know, you can call it divine consciousness or, you know, this, the Akashic field, or you can call it, you know, from a science standpoint, this quantum vacuum or ether or the zero point field. But whatever name you give it, it's, you know, the source energy that, mm-hmm. you know, makes up all there is. And that's, you know, and that's what we are all connected to. And that's where we belong. And it is our thoughts that pull us out of that present moment. And so being aware of, you know, which room we're in means, you know, knowing when we're in the present room and knowing when we're not. Because even though we all know that we can think about something in the past, and the past room is really about when those thoughts produce negative emotions, and we know we can think about something in the future, and those, and especially in the future room, it's when those thoughts produce negative emotions. But we're always doing the thinking right now. We're thinking in the present moment. So it's really our perception of what is happening. And so, you know, our emotions, and we'd like to say our thoughts have the biggest effect on our emotions. But our emotions are not based on what we see and hear. Our emotions are based on our perception of what we see and hear. In other words, our interpretation of what we see and hear.
Mm-hmm.
And so really there's one room, because it's always right here. When we are aligned in the present room and with our source, now we see things from a certain perspective. We see things from a perspective of beauty and joy and compassion and love. And that's, you know, that's really where we want to be. And the biggest challenge that people have is that we give away those wonderful feelings. We relinquish control of those wonderful feelings that we can have all the time, because we let what we see and hear in the physical world affect how we feel, instead of starting with how we feel and aligning with that source and then letting that affect everything we see and hear.
Yeah, well, it's interesting the way you put that, because I have a similar kind of an analogy, but from a broadcasting perspective. We're sitting here, we're talking, and of course, usually, well, every program, every one of these broadcasts is recorded. And I'm watching the editor, the recording program, as it begins the process of compiling the waveform on the screen. Now, there's this line. And though it's visible on the screen, it's really an invisible line, if you will. And on the left side of the line is the wave. It's been created. It's your voice. It's my voice. That would represent the past. On the right side of that line, there's nothing. It's blank because nothing's been created yet. That represents the future. But it's that invisible line right in the center. Just before, or it's like the merging between the empty space and the wave, that is the now, that is the present moment. Because if I can see the wave, it's already the past. And I started thinking about that in terms of my ear, my brain, Like, for example, when I'm listening to you, Kevin, share about the three rooms. And by the way, folks, the3rooms.com is the website. I don't want to miss out giving that out. We'll give it again in a moment. But the moment that I can hear my voice, even in my headphones or in my ears, or I hear your voice, it's already the past. I mean, it's that quick. And so when you talk about mindfulness, we've had a lot of programs where people bring that up. I think I'm really starting to get it. I hope others are too. I think I'm really beginning, because I'm noticing that I just suffered the loss of a dear friend less than 8 or 9 days ago as of this conversation. We knew each other for 30 years in broadcasting, and he always referred to me as his bald brother. That's because when we first met, I had long hair and even a ponytail. And then at one point in 2001, I shaved my head. And so that kind of stuck. And he passed away. It was rather quick, about 4 or 5 months, the process. I find myself going back to those times. And they're good. I like sort of the feeling, although then and he's not here anymore, and so I miss him. But I just think about those wonderful times, and I can hear his voice in my head saying, "Hey, bald brother, you know, how's it going? What are you doing?" You know, and our conversations, or even conversations we never had. I'm hearing that voice, but that's all still in the past, in a manner of speaking, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and I love your analogy of the waves, because I think of the. With the three rooms, I think of the waves all the time, and I think about when you go back into the past and you're in the past room and you're thinking about all these negative emotions. If you think about what those, if you charted and look at what those negative emotions are, you know, look like, it's like really jagged lines and it's disharmony. And when you're in the present room and when you're connected to your source, it's much more wavy lines where you're in harmony or resonance with that, you know, with your higher self. And for the future, that, you know, it's unwritten yet, but how you feel now is what you're going to project into your future. And so if you're thinking negative thoughts, and you're listening to what other people are saying, and you have all of this negative emotions, that's what's going to continue, you know, to you're going to experience. You're going to project that into the future. And if you're feeling harmony now, then that's what you're going to project. But you hit something that's so critical that most people miss, is that everything, when you look at what you see in the world, because some people think the present, being in the present, is saying, well, look, I'm looking, I'm in the present, and I don't like what I see. You know, I'm not happy. I don't have the things that I'm, you know, that I've really dreamed of, and I'm not where I expected to be. But every time you look, no matter what, even if it's a second ago, it's still already in the past, as you said. It's just what you see has already manifested. So where do you want to go? And that's the whole key to the, you know, to, when we talk about the future room and kind of either creating your future or stressing about your future, that is going to completely, you know, take you on two completely different paths.
Well, and if you're sitting there, again, as you just very well elucidated, complaining about what you don't have and all those things, you know, you're not observing. And isn't that the key right there, is that you're not observing. You are looking at the past and comparing it to your present situation, but you're doing a comparison. So you're still in the past. Whereas if I was at the moment I found out about my friend's passing, if I was to just observe that and say, oh, I see what has happened here, you know, and it's not that I don't care. It's just that I am now, I'm changing roles from the person, the individual who knew this person, who had a past with this person, had relationship and experiences, to the person who is just looking in, kind of like watching TV.
Absolutely, or watching TV, or watching the movie of your life, as I like to to allude to, and it's so true. You can, you know, it's about looking at a situation. You can look at someone, you know, with compassion, and you know, especially the passing of someone. You know, it's okay to feel, you know, to feel hurt, to feel sad, you know, to feel that. And I think, you know, sadness is kind of a derivative of love if it's, you know, coming from the place of compassion. But doing it now, and you can choose to think about, you know, wonderful times with that person, and you can feel good about that. Because I hear a lot, you know, people say, well, you can't always be in the present because, you know, you have to look back at the past and you have to learn from the past and you have to plan for the future. So you can't always be in the present. But that's not quite true. You know, you can be in the present and look back at the past and recalling, like I said, fond memories of a friend or you know, positive past experiences. And the key is knowing, being aware that you're looking into at your past.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between getting stuck in the past is when you don't realize you're there. You're thinking about things that frustrated you or angered you or, you know, make you feel guilty, and you just keep those negative emotions. And so it's being aware that you're there, and looking forward to the future. You know, people take what they don't have. And you put it perfectly. They look at in the past, you know what they want and what they wanted, and they look at today and they look now and they say, well, I don't have it, and they take that, you know, into the future. And that's how creating anxiety and stress is about, you know, looking at what is, which, as you alluded to, it's what's already past. And if your desires have not yet come to fruition or been manifested yet, then you look to the future and you focus on what isn't and what you don't have, and those thoughts prevent your desires from coming.
Yeah.
And the flip side is in the present, if you think of those desires that you want and you imagine, instead of thinking about what is, you imagine what can be, and you focus on the feeling of your desires already coming true, then that's the key to creating your future instead of stressing about it. Because, you know, of course we need to look to the future. We need to plan for the future. But when we're in the future room, we focus on what isn't. And we're in the present room, we focus on what can be.
Now, there's a difference between your description of looking to the future and asking that question, what can be, the possibilities. There's a difference between that and someone looking to the future and saying, it's just going to be the same as it was back in the past. It's just, you know, I'm just going to have this, I'm not going to be able to get out of this rut. It's this way. It's in 10 years, I'm going to be in the same place. I could be in a worse place. I could be on the street homeless. That's not even in the future. You're still in the past, right?
Exactly. And you want to, a good way to look at it, it's really one word can change completely how you view the future and what happens in your future and how you feel about your future. Because as we're talking about, we so often take what we've learned from other people and we get our identity from our feedback from others, and we project that into the future, and we always add to our, you know, whatever we think of ourselves, which is I am, and we add the word not. And so if your desires are to be healthy or your desires are to be wealthy, you know, you keep thinking and you keep looking at, even if you're looking at what is, but which is really, as you allude to, in the past, you keep thinking, I am not healthy, I am not wealthy, I am not able to do this, and I'm not going to be able to, you know, get that job. So those thoughts, the not, every time you add not to your definition of yourself, which is following the words I am, you immediately, you know, cut off your access to your desires that you actually want to come. But if you substituted not and you put one word instead, so instead of saying I am not, you slip in, I already am. And that word already makes all the difference, because now you have a desire to be healthy or wealthy. If you start to say that one word in the middle, I already am healthy, I already am wealthy, you start to come from the place of feeling wealthy. You start to come from the place of feeling healthy. And that is allows you to start to attract all the things into your life that brings about that health and wealth and your desires. And if you say it to yourself, it is powerful. You just say, I already am. And that just by saying that, there's a clarity to it, that it has already happened, and you just haven't gotten to that, you know, physically yet it hasn't happened, but in your consciousness it's already happened. And what are all the great visionaries in the world that have ever existed? It's all about imagining a future of what you would like to happen and coming from the place as if it has already happened, as if your wish is already fulfilled. And it's simply that one word, I already am, makes such a difference.
I'm going to share with you something that I have on my phone on its lock screen. And this is something that it took me a long time to get to, and it's been modified over the last couple of months. It says, I am good at what I do. I am going far. Now, the last part's a little ambiguous in one sense, but it started from actually from a place of I am good at what I do, and I believe that I am going far. And then I took out the phrase believe to a place of knowing I am. When we come back from the break, I would like for you to help us I'd like to converse a little bit about the aspect of the power of words. We've already started that conversation. I want to continue it on the other side of the break, okay?
You got it.
Kevin Murphy is my guest. His present book is called The Three Rooms, and you are listening to the two voices of myself and Kevin Murphy here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We will be right back. Welcome back. We appreciate your staying with us as we continue our conversation with Kevin Murphy and The Three Rooms. TheThreeRooms.com is the website, and you can also go to our website, click on Kevin's name, Kevin Murphy, and you will be taken immediately to that website to get more information about all this great stuff. One of the subjects that has always intrigued me, and it's ever since I A, became aware of, B, became frustrated with, politics, and this is not going back 2 years. This is not going back maybe 30 or 40 years. I remember during one gubernatorial campaign, maybe it's actually pronounced gubernatorial in any event, one of the candidates in the primaries was blasting his opponent and brought up something that had been resolved decades earlier in court, and everything basically washed out just fine for this individual, the other candidate. But the first candidate brought it up. And I thought, what's going on here? You know, these guys are supposedly politically on the same side, and yet they're just scrapping it. You know, this one guy's just scrapping at the other. And he was saying these different things. And I brought up the point, Kevin, I said, I don't understand. You know, why are they saying this stuff? Because I take people at their word. If you say something to me, I expect that you mean it. And there are times when people will say things to me in a humorous or satirical way, and it'll go right over my head sometimes because I take people at their word at face value, right? And so I kind of miss the joke sometimes. So I have to kind of put that little filter down and kind of enjoy the humor. But this wasn't humorous. And I said, if he doesn't mean it, you know, someone said, Richard, you're taking it too seriously. It's just politics. I said, no, it's not. I said, because this individual's intent is to win a particular office and then exert the powers of that office for whatever their agenda happens to be. So this isn't just politics. In religion, it's the same way. In institutions, whether it's education or economics or whatever, it's the same thing. I mean, somebody can say something in the government and it can drive the stock market right through the floor or up through the ceiling, right? Just a simple few words, right? And yet people, they seem to not understand the power of words. Can you elaborate further for us on that in the light of the three rooms?
Well, it's really interesting, how in kindergarten, we learn, sticks and stones may, hurt our bones, but names will never harm us.
And I found that is a lie.
And because we allow it to, the other big lesson that we're all taught, not just, allowing other people's words to hurt us, but, from the movie Bambi, I'll never forget, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. Thumper's mom telling him that. So, we kind of know that, be careful about, don't say hurtful words to other people, and meanwhile, hurtful words can't help you. But you're so right on the money that we do let people's words hurt us. And we have to understand, where they're coming from. And they're coming, anytime, we're hearing something from other people, that's coming from their perceptions of what they see in the world, which is based on their experience of life, which is different from yours. And so whenever you hear words, it's okay to whether you say, well, I think he meant this, and I think that's how he feels, but we can listen to words, but we don't have to let them define us. We don't have to let them determine and alter how we view ourselves. And so if someone is telling you, you're not good enough, you're not going to make that team, it's never going to happen, and you accept that, you let those words define you, then you start saying, I am not going to make that team. I know, what was I kidding? I'm not fast enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not talented enough. I'm that's true. I'm just not going to be able to do that. So we're letting someone else's opinions define who we are. And the words then that we use to ourself, to define ourself, is we're echoing someone else. And now that is relinquishing who we are and how we feel to someone outside of us. And since we can't control what they think or say or do, we're completely giving up control of how we feel and what we think about ourselves because we're basing on someone else. And that's such a critical mistake. And how we get around that is changing how we speak to ourselves. And it's not echoing words that other people are defining us as. It's echoing the words that we know how our own higher self would describe us and telling us, which is, you are great. You are wonderful. I am, and your words were just so powerful. I am good. I mean, Richard, that what you put down, I am going to be fine. Those are the words that we want to hear. And whose words are those? So those are not words that other people are telling us. Those are words coming from within.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you're in the present room. Those are the words that make all the difference. And I'll give you the power of two words, because so often I hear people say, Kevin, all during the day, I'm pretty good, and I think I live in the present room, and I'm pretty positive, but I have trouble sleeping at night a lot. I go to bed, I'm thinking about the next day, I'm pretty stressed out, and I wake up in the middle of the night sometimes, I'm thinking about this project I got to do and how I'm going to get it done, and I just don't sleep really well, and then I wake up in the morning and I'm still thinking about it. And that's part of the challenge of our society today with so much stress, and stress being the number one cause, of chronic illness, that people are constantly worrying about the future. And it's when they go to bed at night thinking stressful things and worrying about what's going to happen, you wake up in the morning and you're right back in that cycle. So two words, right before you go to bed at night, if you just, every single night, you just start saying the two words, thank you, thank you, thank you. And ideally, you start to think about things, you know, if you constantly think about things that you're grateful for, that's really even more powerful. But just saying the two words, and this gets to your point of the power of words, just saying those two words, not even thinking about consciously what you're grateful for, but you start to subconsciously think about things you're grateful for. You say, thank you, thank you, thank you. And that's your habit. Okay, right before I go to bed, the last two words I think of are thank you. And I can guarantee you that in one day, or certainly in one week, every night you go to bed thinking those two words, thank you, you will wake up in the morning and the first two words you think of are thank you. And then you just keep saying thank you, thank you. And sometimes you go and you start brushing your teeth, thank you, thank you. And now all of a sudden, it starts triggering something inside of you that starts thinking, okay, things that you're grateful for. And you think, thank you, and thank you, oh, thank you for this, and thank you for that. And I say thank you, and the first thing in the morning I wake up, I say thank you, and my wife's, you know, sitting next to me, and I love her dearly. And I say thank you, and that's, whoa, thank you for her, and thank you for my daughter, for my children. And you just start saying thank you. So the power of words, either we can let other people define who we are by their words, or we can let our higher self, our own internal being, define who we are by its words. And I'd much rather connect to that, you know, that my inner being, my soul, and let my soul define who I am, because that is really who I am.
Well, I often use this little story when someone is taking in the words of other people. And I say, you know, there's this individual that you are you're around 24/7, 365, and you listen to that voice of that person, sporadically, but then there's the person that you listen to who's around, and I just threw this arbitrary number out, 5 minutes once a week, and you nearly base your entire life on that individual's information, and you only see that person for 5 minutes once a week. And of course, obviously, the difference between the two is one is the outside source, as you've described. The other is me, the individual, the person, the I am, if you will, of that scenario. And I don't listen to my own words. I listen to the words of somebody else because as a kid growing up, because, well, they're my elder, they're my parents, they're a person of authority, you know, and so forth. And then, of course, we get to a stage as we've grown up, Kevin, where using the phrase from the 60s, of which I know a little, but I was still a kid in single digits, but, never trust authority or question everything. And of course, then you become the cynic. And I'm wondering if maybe that cynicism is also then turned inward. We then question even ourselves and our own gut feeling and our own intuition and our own higher self, if you will, or divine guidance. Is that a fair scenario?
I think that's a really fair scenario. I think we are kind of taught, you know, to question things, and that's okay to be questioning things, mm-hmm. but it really comes down to how you feel. And you know, you've mentioned, you know, the word intuition a couple of times, and it's so powerful that, you know, that intuition is that connection to, you know your eternal being, if you will, or that I that only you can see and that only you can feel. And we really do have to trust that intuition. And that doesn't come from feedback we're getting from everyone else. And that's connected to this, you know, to the same source that makes up, you know, everything there is. And so trusting that intuition is so critical. And it's just like, you know, for your future, it's stating your intentions. Like, what are my intentions? What do I imagine? What would I like to achieve? Not what, you know, other people said I can and can't do. You know, what would I like to do? And assume that to be true. Like, stating your intentions is so powerful, and imagining it to be true. And, you know, then feeling as if it is true and going with that. Because, you know, even, in the three rooms, I have, I use a quick story about Dr. Seuss. And, you know, he was walking down the street one day, and he had gotten his children's book rejected 27 times, and he bumped into an old friend who happened to be a publisher and said, hey, I'll take a look at your book. And he ended up publishing his book, and then he ended up, you know, helping millions of children with his with all of his books. Now you think about, you know, his intuitions, his intentions. In order to get rejected 27 times, you have to believe in yourself that this is what I want to do. I have a calling. I know I'm supposed to do this. And if he listened to the words of everyone else, after the first time or second time, or certainly after the first 20 times, he would have said, who am I kidding? This is a dumb idea. I'm never going to be a children's author. They're so right. I'm a loser. All those things could have been going through his head. But he had to be trusting that intuition that, you know what, something's going to give. Something is going to happen. And being open for it to happen. So on that day, when he was walking down the street, he didn't do what a lot of us do when we're feeling rejected and we see someone we know coming. We're like, oh, crap, here comes Bill. I don't want to talk to Bill. He's going to ask me how I'm doing. And you duck into the store and you let him walk by because you don't feel like explaining how, you know, you can't get your book published. But instead, he was open for it. He said, I know this is going to happen. I'm, you know, what's, you know, show me the signs, and here, hey, Bill, how you doing? What's going on? Yeah. Hey, you know what? I'm working for a publishing company. Holy mackerel! You know what? I've got a book. I've got a great children's book. Would you be willing to take a look at it? Sure. So, what happened there? This is a true story in Dr. Seuss's real life, that he was open to allowing, you know, life to unfold for him, and he trusted his intuition.
Mm. There is the story of the man who invented the incandescent light bulb, Thomas Edison. And after he had finally come up with the final version at that time, the question was asked of him, how many times did he fail before he got it right? And my understanding was that there were like 990 some odd versions that didn't work. And his comment to them, he says, I never failed. I just found 990 some odd ways that it didn't work. And that's
great story.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we have to keep doing. I mean, I sit here, I've talked with guests and I don't know about you, Kevin, my dad, he was none too happy with my brother and I pulling out his toolbox and starting to mess around with his tools when we were doing something in the backyard, if it was building a fort or whatever it was, because 9 times out of 10, young boys don't usually put things back where they're supposed to go. We miss that rule in kindergarten. You know, when you finish playing with the toys, put them back where you got them. But nonetheless, I started collecting tools. And especially as a young adult, and I got my toolbox and I started getting this for my bicycle, my wrenches and screwdrivers and so forth. And I've hung on to them. And over the years, since I moved out and got married, more tools and more tools. And matter of fact, I just went out and I bought a $60 toolbox that actually has another one inside. So I've actually filled both of them with tools, with all the tools that I have. But I also did throw away a few things, too, that were, you know, rusted because I, whatever. And I have all these tools now, right? And I can do just, I somehow managed to come across this device that's supposed to allow you to clamp your caliper brakes, I don't know if it open, I guess it is, while you're changing the rotor and the pad. Now, just by virtue of the way I described that, it tells you that is not something that I am going to be doing, okay? I'm taking my car to the mechanic. But for some reason, I have that tool, right? I have a pipe wrench. All right. I know what to do with that, but most likely I'll call the plumber, you know. But I have all these tools nonetheless, and I do things with them. I can do some minor repairs, and I can build some stuff. I've done that around the house, both back in Phoenix and here in Santa Barbara. Well, I take a look at my life. I take a look at, for example, my career. And over the nearly 40 years that I've been doing this, interviewing and producing and creating and so on and so forth, I have amassed incredible tools in my toolbox, right? And then I look at that toolbox and I'm going, I have all these tools.
why am I not further along? Why am I not more successful? Why don't I have more money? Why don't I have this? And actually, what just shot into my brain was what we talked about in the first segment about the room. I'm wanting to look at my future, but I'm actually looking at my past, aren't I?
Yeah, and trying to project that into the future.
Yeah. And thinking that I've got all these tools. Kevin, what's my problem? I've collected and amassed all of these tools, whether it's a literal toolbox and I should go into construction because I certainly have the tools for it, or, again, whatever the endeavor that we've taken on. It's like with, you know, your example of Dr. Seuss, you know, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this guy probably has drawings at that time, had drawings all over the place. All right. Look at all I've done. And I'm not getting anywhere, but
well, you say I'm not getting anywhere, like in that analogy. And I think that's what a lot of people do. They say, look at, I've amassed all this knowledge and I have all this information, and how come I'm not getting anywhere? And how come I'm not, being more successful? And what is success? Everybody defines it differently. And so does it mean acquiring more stuff? And is that define success? Or can you say, look at all the tools that I have accumulated, all the knowledge that I have accumulated, and I already am enough, and I'm willing to share this with people. And look, in your case, you're sharing your gifts with people to spread, ideas of consciousness-minded living. And that's a wonderful thing. So, it already is enough.
Mm.
And so that's when you come from that place of, I already am that. And instead of, we look to acquire more and more of the stuff that we can't take with us when we leave this physical plane, instead of focusing on all the things within us that we can acquire, that we can take with us. Things like, compassion, things like satisfaction of learning all these different things, and things like joy and appreciation, those kind of things, that's what we can take with us, that eye that nobody else can see. And who cares about what this eye that everybody else can see, because I can't take all that stuff with me anyway.
You know, what flashed in my mind was the passage, biblical passage from the New Testament, and I'll do my utmost to keep it in context, but it's a short one. Be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I remember 30 years ago pondering that while I was working for the Christian radio station, trying to figure out, what does that mean? What does it mean to be perfect? Because we're always hearing about the rules, the right and the wrong, the new Ten Commandments and all of this kind of stuff, right? And it finally dawned on me, the very thing that you just said is the very definition of perfect. Just be who you are. Just be. And that's enough. It's more than enough, actually, when you think about it. I've even thought about it from the context of if one is of that particular philosophy, the sacrifice that was made for those who had value, because I kept hearing about how lowly we were, how pitiful we were, and we're sinners and, we're nothing more than worms in the dirt, kind of stuff. And I thought, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Obviously we had to have had some value. Otherwise, that wouldn't have been done, right?
Yeah, and funny that concept of, we are sinners, and let's say, in Christ not, then there's that separation between us and him.
Yeah.
And yet, he also taught that I am in you, and that oneness with all of the mystical traditions in ancient wisdoms all talk about this oneness, the blending of, the blending of you and you, the you that everyone else sees, and the you that only you can see, the ego and the Holy Spirit, or that eternal being. And that's really what it's all about. And to me, it just keeps coming back to getting to know that person inside you that only you know, getting to, appreciate that person and knowing and communicating with that person and listening to that person saying, you know, I am happy with you and I am you. And to me, complete satisfaction, you know, at the end of our life, when, you know, if we're all sitting on our deathbed, what do we want to feel? We want to feel satisfied with our life. And it's kind of what you were alluding to earlier, like thinking I've done, you know, people who say I've done all these things, but I'm still not where I want to be. And the satisfaction is knowing I am already where I want to be. I am aligned and I'm in communications with and I'm in touch with in my emotions with that part of me that's just not this physical body. And if we can do that, and if that can be our purpose, and that can be our success, that I've aligned with my higher self, then we're successful.
Hmm. Well, I find this conversation that we have had so enlightening. You know, I joke with people, and it's sort of a joke, but maybe not so much, that this is these programs, it's my therapy, you know. And I'm fortunate that the only payment I have to make is conversing with the guest and getting information. But I also see this as Christmas morning, and this goes to what you just said, because I get to dive into Kevin Murphy's world and his head and his heart and maybe glean some things from him. But you know what? What just occurred to me as you were sharing that aspect of getting to know self, the greater gift is in getting to know self.
It really is. It's the greatest gift. Yeah. It's the greatest thing that we can do is getting to know that part of us that only, you know, only we can see and only we can feel, and not letting anyone else define us, but letting us be defined by, you know, our relationship with our own inner being.
Do you find in your travels and talking about this and related subjects of higher consciousness and so forth, are you finding more and more people are, so to speak, waking up to this reality, that this reality isn't all there is, folks, and that you need to start gathering up those things that you, if you can put it in this context, that you can take with you?
Yeah, I really do, and there's always a fine line that I draw of getting more and more spiritual and deeply connected with that higher self. And because from a spiritual perspective, you know, when you're in the present room, you're aligned with your higher self, with that, you know, that divine consciousness or Christ consciousness or Buddha consciousness. And when we leave, we think of things in the past or future and we have negative emotions. It simply means we have disconnected from our own higher self. And so we can go deeper and deeper from a spiritual standpoint. But then modern science is, you know, you don't have to have a true deep faith or belief in a divine presence or God in order to benefit from the concepts of the three rooms, because being stuck in the past or future room, there's scientific explanations about, you know, every thought we have releases a chemical, and if it's a stressful type thought, it releases cortisol into the body, it goes into our hormonal systems, you know, it sends messages back to the brain to produce more thoughts equal to those emotions. And that's how we get stuck in these cycles and loops of stress, or, you know, cycles and loops of anger. And we see people that, you know, she's always stressed out. She's always worrying about things. Or look at him. He's always angry. What's his problem? And because physically it happens. So, you know, you can look at it from a physical standpoint and say, you know what? I want to get, you know, away from that. I want to come back into the present. And that's, you know, where I can not only be happier, but, you know, healing. Because, you know, the last thing I'll say from a science standpoint, when you look at all of the spontaneous healings that are happening around the world today from real chronic illnesses, there's one common link, and all of them said that they believe and trust in a power greater than them. You know, the power that created the body, can heal the body. They just have relinquished their thoughts and perceptions on how their health is to a part of them that's greater than them. So you can now go into the spiritual side of that. They're connecting to God the Father. They're, mm-hmm. they're connecting to Christ consciousness. But leave out the spiritual side of it. They're just saying there is an energy that's, you know, that I'm connected to that's greater than me, and that can heal my body. And we're seeing it today, documented cases, over thousands of cases of spontaneous healings.
You know, my friend who just passed away, as I mentioned earlier, his philosophy, he was a Rastafarian, of all things, which I found fascinating because he introduced me to a genre of music that supposedly was part of that whole beginnings back in, from what I did some research on, in the 1930s with, now I can't remember the guy's name. But anyway, reggae music in particular. And, Haile Selassie, that was his name. The I believe he was the king of Ethiopia at the time. And his belief, and this is my understanding, is that the belief of Rastafarians is they don't go to doctors. They have that philosophy of whatever is, you know, and it's not a question of there's nothing I can do about it or et cetera, et cetera. It's this is life. This is my life. And, you know, if I have this condition, it's just what is. And I will roll with it. I don't think I've ever seen an unhappy, and I haven't seen a lot of them, but the few I have seen, I have never seen an unhappy Rastafarian. I've never seen an unhappy person who listens to and enjoys reggae. I think of Bob Marley. I've seen some videos of him, and I'm thinking, wow, this guy, he's a happy dude, you know, a little mellow, but he's still a happy dude, you know? And I think that maybe that's kind of they've reached that place of I guess that I love this word equanimity, where you know they've just accepted what is in their lives and life as it is, and it's not the struggle that we in other philosophies seem to make it, and especially as I was born and raised in Roman Catholicism. You know, the whole aspect of suffering, you know.
it's so true. And let's go back to, you know, the words and how we let words define us and what are the words that they, you know, that they use. You know, Bob Marley, you know, everything's going to be all right. You know, that over and over, you know, it's, you know, don't worry, be happy. Those kind of things, those are the words. And so if you're saying, well, I don't really recall, you know, any, you know, someone of that kind of, you know, consciousness being, you know, being upset or being angry, it's because what they keep over and over reinforcing is everything's going to be all right, meaning I'm not going to have stress, you know, in my life. And, you know, don't worry, be happy. I'm going to keep thoughts of happiness and joy, and that's what I'm going to project out. And it's a powerful use of words and emotions.
Yeah. I'm also very impressed that you remember those words. But those are probably some of the most famous words that most people would remember, you know, from Bob Marley. Everything's going to be all right.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it is actually a lot of fun to go through the process, in my opinion, to go through this process of discovering these things, because I guess that's where this aspect of I want to say duality in that respect, but not specifically that. But it's, as I've talked with guests on this program, and I've expressed my utter consternation at this whole dualistic system, because the ancient wisdom teachings, they teach us where we come from, the one. And then they tell us, oh, and guess where you're going to? The one. Okay, then why are we here? You know, the ultimate question. I don't understand. If we're coming from there and we're going to there, is this just like a vacation or a side trip or something? You know, because it's so frustrating. But that goes to this whole aspect of what you're talking about in reference to the three rooms, that, yeah, maybe a dualistic world. It may be a dualistic world, but that doesn't mean that we have to swing from the end of the pendulum, right? We could shinny up to the pivot, to that center point, where all we're doing is just kind of turning like on a, like I'm sitting on a swivel seat, right? And that's all we're doing is that's all the movement there is. And everything's going to be all right.
Yeah, and you know, you hit something so critical in a dualistic world, and it really should be the one. You know, the two shall become one. And the two, to me, and from a three rooms perspective, is your thoughts and your emotions. And that's what's always linked together. And when we are in the present room, you know, our thoughts and emotions are in alignment, and we feel those things of joy and peace and happiness. And that's where we're supposed to be. That's where we've come from. That's where we're going. That's how we're supposed to be. And when our thoughts take us separate to think about things that cause negative emotions, now we have separated. And now there's the dualistic, you know, part of our being in society. And that separation comes from everything we see and hear in the outer world, and people telling us things, you know, to look at things differently, and that we are separate. And so that separation causes emotions of fear. And it's the opposite emotions of what we are. In the present room, it's always love-based emotions. In the past and future room, it's always derivatives of fear. It's because our thoughts have separated from that, you know, from that consciousness that we came from.
Yeah. And because folks are so vested in that fear and that particular consciousness, it's sometimes very difficult for them to hear us, you, me, say those words. Oh, no, come on. This is the real world here. We got to deal with, you know, I got to pay mortgage and I got a car payment and this and that and the other, got the kids and I got to go to work every day and on and the list goes. And the government's doing this and the church is doing that and the schools are doing this. And it's like, oh, I'm not even going to use the phrase literally, but metaphorically or euphemistically, you know, your head wants to explode, this is good stuff. This is really good stuff. I encourage people to pick up a copy of The Three Rooms. Again, the website is thethreerooms.com. We encourage you to go there, and we encourage you to pick up this book to change your thoughts and then change your life. Let me ask you one final question in regards to this. I heard this statement made, or I was talking with someone, and I used the word change, and it kind of goes to the power of words. And they said, well, let's not use the word change anymore. Let's use the word transform. This has nothing to do with political correctness. This has to do with the intent of the word, because if you change, it can change back, right? And I suppose someone could argue, well, yeah, but if you can transform it, it could transform back again. Well, it just sounds more permanent when you say transform, you know? What are your thoughts on this aspect of us transforming, to use that word, ourselves, our families, our communities, our society, our global community, to one that, benefits everybody, all 7.6 billion of us?
I love that concept of transform. And I think, you know, mostly it's what works for you. And, you know, I can clearly see how, you know, that can be, you know, a powerful thought and a powerful, you know, emotion to be able to transform. If that creates a feeling of more permanence in being aligned with, you know, who you really are, then transform and and be there. And so, changing, you know, I'd like to think from a three rooms perspective, we can't just always, as human beings, it's really hard to always be in the present, always aligned with our source, always feeling good. So we are going to get pulled out, you know, into, you know, with negative emotions throughout the course of a day. But it's the awareness of when you are pulled out. The quicker you are aware that you've been, your thoughts are pulling you in a different direction that are causing negative emotions, the faster you can get back in and come back in alignment.
I'm curious about one final thing before we wrap this up, and that is, from your perspective in this a little over hour and 10-minute program that we've done thus far, is there anything that we have left out of this equation of the three rooms that you feel compelled, inspired, intuited to share with our audience?
Probably, you know, one quick concept of forgiveness. Because so many times people get stuck in the past room. They have feelings of anger, resentment, sometimes hatred, or, you know, guilt and things. And so, you know, the best way, the fastest way, the most complete way to come back into the present and let go of those negative emotions is forgiveness. And unfortunately, we all have too many, you know, we all have our own line of what forgiveness is. You know, well, I'm a forgiving person, but I'm not going to forgive that. Mm-hmm. You know, they cross the line. And the final message I would like to say is that there is no line in forgiveness. If you want true forgiveness, I mean, the front page of today's newspaper that on Long Island, New York, was about a woman with a drunk driver killed her husband. And the front page is something like, I forgive her. Meaning, I completely forgive her. This would be understandable if she said, I want this person to go to jail and spend the rest of her life there. She killed my husband. But she didn't do that. She said, I forgive her. And so when people can forgive, when they come from a place of such deep hurt and sorrow, then think about how when you're not forgiving someone for something you think they said to you 3 days ago, and how ridiculous that sounds. So forgiveness, there's only unconditional forgiveness. There's no other kind of forgiveness, and that's something I think we all could benefit from.
I had to do that with a notable individual who's in the news pretty regularly, and it took me a long time to get to this place, and it even stuck in my throat when I first said it out loud to myself. But I was able actually to finally say, I forgive you for drawing me in emotionally and getting me, you know, and for me getting all charged up and so forth. But then I didn't stop there. I then said, and I forgive myself for allowing myself to be drawn in to that emotional quagmire, if you will, or swamp, so to speak. And I have to say that I have to say it from time to time, sometimes when I'm listening to the news, and it seems to help. It really does. I mean, even though I might not really feel it, I mean, you don't feel it down to the soles of your feet per se, but to say the words, and I'm not sure how much credence you give to fake it till you make it, but I figure if I can just keep doing that, then I'm not going to get drawn into that mess that I got drawn into in September of 2016 that took me 6 months to get out of. Where my first phrase was, thank you, teacher, for teaching me how I don't want to behave, and then going to the next step of, I forgive you and I forgive myself.
Powerful words, Richard, really powerful words. And I think you then start to realize that forgiving doesn't let the other person off the hook. Forgiving lets you off the hook.
That's
it. You can let go of those negative emotions that have been clinging to so long, and now you're free to move on with your life. So, you know, good for you. That's a wonderful story.
Before we wrap up the program, first of all, thank you so much, Kevin Murphy, for joining us here on the program, talking to us about your philosophy and the three rooms, how we can change our thoughts and then change our life, which is what we're all looking to do. And if you should find yourself, by the way, I've been to Long Island. I went to Long Island Sound for a fireside with a group of Baha'is, which was, it was wonderful. I loved it. And of course, it was at night, so I didn't get to see much. But my friend lived on Long Island. It's a neat place. I really, really enjoyed it. If you ever find yourself over on this end of the country in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Well, thank you very much. I would love to continue that. It's really been a pleasure being on your show, and I really appreciate you having me on.
And we also want to let our listeners know that if you'd like to support the radio broadcast, we can use all the support we can get. I have a PayPal's link on my website on the homepage as well as on the missions page. If you go to the missions page, folks, you can read about what we are all about if you haven't picked up on it here on this particular program. And you can also go to the radio show's page to listen to the podcast as well. And do what you you can. We'll take energetic support as well, folks. So, you know, don't think that it always has to be monetarily, although we're certainly in a great appreciation of that as well. And a reminder that if you are listening to the radio broadcast version of this program, there's more. There's a lot more, folks. And we hope that you will avail yourselves of that by going to the SoundCloud or iTunes to listen to the entire podcast of Tell Me Your Story here on the program. Kevin, I have three final questions that I like to ask each of my guests. And again, thank you so much for giving us so much time. First question is, who is Kevin Murphy?
Kevin Murphy is an eternal being who has manifested in this physical body in order to experience himself.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
To allow other people to continue to connect to that, you know, inner being within them, to that, you know, higher self, because I think that's our number one purpose on this earth is to align with our own higher self. And if by focusing more and more on align with my own, other people can better align with theirs, then I've been successful.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Well, I would have to, you know, echo the same thing. Which I think is really what we're all here for, is to keep feeling that joy from within, from aligning with that same energy and source that we came from and where we're going. When we can align our thoughts and our emotions together to connect with that higher self, that's what we're here for. And that changes everything we see and hear in our life. So you want to get rid of all the stresses, you want to get rid of all the anger, you align with that higher self, your own inner being, all those other negative emotions melt away.
I also like the picture on the cover. It's got the three doorways with no doors unless they swing in. And there's light coming out of the center door. And I'm going to just speculate that the symbology is that on the left door is the past, the right door is the future, and the center door is the now, the here, the center line. And we are grateful that you've shared this center line with us here on the program today.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be on.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Go out there and change your thoughts, because you will change your life and the lives of the people around you. I guarantee it. What have you got to lose but a better life? Until next time, love Talal.